You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 13th of November. Deion Waiters is enemy number one. Rudy Gobert out 4 to 6 weeks. We'll talk about that. Review the weekend of two divergent ball games. And it was play-by-play announcer sleepover. Special guest comes in segment three today. It's all coming up on Locked On Jazz. Pow. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz with insight, expertise, and all sorts of other funny, goofy stuff you cannot get anywhere else. Thanks very much for tuning in. You can grab it on Android, on Apple. You can tell Alexa to play it. You can tell OK Google to do it as well. Uh-oh, I just did that. Now OK Google's going to talk to me. It is a nice Monday for you, but a bad day in the Jazz world as Rudy Gobert is out 4 to 6 weeks. In our second little segment, we'll look at the impact of that. We'll first segment today, we'll run through the weekend's events of what happened with the Jazz over the weekend, and then we will look ahead for you as well, heading toward the matchup with the Timberwolves with a special guest on today's program. So that's the plan. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Chevy. Tyson and the crew out there are having a great November and excited to have you come on out for Murdoch Chevy's November month of excitement. I'll tell you a little bit more about what they have going on as well as coming up on the program as well for you, brought to you by ZipRecruiter. All right, let's get to it. Miami on Friday night. We played a weird back-to-back. And Miami Friday night, the Jazz offense was historically bad. From what we have found up to 96-97, it's the worst second half of offense, of field goal shooting, I guess, not points, but four field goals up to 96-97 when records are kept is the fewest field goals in any game all year that we have found, thanks to various people around and StatsCube and other data pieces. The Jazz just simply, it just got bad. They couldn't score. And frankly, by the end of that game, you really began to wonder whether the Ricky Rubio, Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert combination was one that was going to work. That was, I think, a legitimate question. The offense had just bogged down so badly when the three of those guys were on the floor together and the spacing had gotten fairly catastrophic that you began to kind of wonder that. Now, it turns out that in that game, Rudy Gobert gets hit by Deion Waiters in the knee, and we probably never, or, you know, for the next month or so, we may not get that answer. It's also a game which Quinn Snyder started Donovan Mitchell in place of Rodney Hood due to Rodney Hood's poor first quarter play where he's shooting about 12%. It's a night in which Ricky Rubio was just awful, 0 for 5 turnovers, just couldn't have looked more out of sorts in a game, and the numbers are incredible. The Jazz offensive rating was a 76.6. Remember, league average is about 106.5. Best is 110. Under 100 is defensively is brilliant. And the Jazz defense was brilliant that night. 87.0 is what the Jazz defense was on that night. The shooting numbers, it's almost hard to look at, frankly, for the Jazz in that ball game. They just missed shot after shot after shot and in a make-or-miss league. But it began to clearly build on itself, and it began to clearly get inside the head of the players. I thought that was obvious in that ballgame. The Jazz from straightaway three were 0 for 9.
See if they could exploit it.
They only got one corner three against Miami in the whole game, which is a sign the offense wasn't working. We've talked, they're 4 of 13 from the mid-range. They're 4 of 18 from the paint non-restricted, which Alan Horton of the Timberwolves is calling the floater zone, which is a nice way to say it. I mean, it was just, there's not a lot to say about this one. Open looks, this was what was interesting. Talking to Quinn Snyder afterwards, and the next day, he's like, I don't know necessarily what to do. We got 35 uncontested looks and made 10 of them. Rodney Hood was 3 of 12 on uncontested looks. Donovan Mitchell was 1 of 5. Joe Ingles was 0 for 4. Just a bad night. Now you flip it over to Saturday. Suddenly, Derek Favors is starting at center. Rudy Gobert is out. And the Jazz play the Brooklyn Nets, who are on the back-to-back and playing their fifth game of a road trip and probably playing about as many games in a short period of time as you can play in the NBA now. And the Jazz looked like a completely different team. Thabo Sefolosha started at the power forward. Derek Favors was the center. Derek Favors had 24-12. He only had one double-double all of last year. It was against Atlanta in Atlanta. The floor seemed more spread. The offensive penetration into the paint was far better. Donovan Mitchell had 26. Thabo Sefolosha just had a brilliant game with 5 steals, 9 rebounds. Didn't seem outmatched playing the four at all against a team without a big guy. And so a little bit of this is that you're seeing a matchup here where the Jazz are playing a team that has no center after Mozgov. And Mozgov was so bad that he played only, I think, 11 minutes in that game. And you're seeing a and you're seeing a little bit of the Jazz spreading the floor and then also against a tired team. So it's going to take a long time to try to figure out whether or not that's got any relevancy to it. This so far this year, Favors has been on the court for Favors and Gobert have been on the court for 237 minutes together. The offensive rating is a 93.5. In the 114 minutes that Favors has been on the court without Gobert, the offensive rating is 109.1. I'll say that again because you're driving or listening or however you're doing it and you're probably not entirely grasped in a lot of numbers. Let me say it again. The offensive rating with Favors and Gobert on the floor together was a 93.5. The offensive rating with Favors on the court and no Gobert is a 109.1. So it's 14 points per 100 possessions better. Now, a lot of that is still with Udo on the floor. If you now look at it when Gobert and Udo are both off the floor, Favors has played 43 minutes of center this year. In those, I think that's right. There's something funky here. I think one might be a per game. Not entirely sure. The offensive rating is a 114.5 when Favors is on the floor as the center, and a defensive rating of 97.5. It's pretty good. Now, you know, what does that mean? Again, a lot of that is in that matchup the other night. Sefolosha playing the four in that lineup is an interesting mix because he does seem to be able to hold his ground well enough. The Jazz have played 34 minutes with Favors and Sefolosha on the court with Udo and Gobert off the floor and they're plus 34. So pretty impressive. I don't know. Again, I'm not sure how much I'm putting into it, but it's out there to at least think about, look at, see, contemplate, whatever, however else you want to do it. In that, the offensive rating for the Jazz was a 116.3 against Brooklyn. So that was the best offensive game of the year by the Jazz, considerably actually. Best was opening night against Denver. The defense was not as good. The defense against Brooklyn was a 108.2. So suddenly without Gobert, we are less good, you know, below average. Brooklyn's not a particularly good offensive team, so that probably should be even a little bit more disconcerting from that standpoint. The quick check on shooting. Remember the night before we couldn't hit water if we fell out of a boat? Cliche. 36-point second quarter offense explodes a little. Why? Because, well, those same open looks that we couldn't hit the night before, we hit a little bit better, but not great. 18 of 48. Rodney Hood, again, 3 of 10. Ricky Rubio, 3 of 8. Donovan Mitchell, 2 of 8. So even in that game, we did not. Instead, Donovan Mitchell went 8 of 10, and Derek Favors went 7 of 10 on contested shots, which is most likely around the basket, against a team without a center. So that's why you're hearing some trepidation on my part, despite the fact that the numbers look so good, of whether or not I really believe that all of this is, oh, we found the answer, we spread the floor with Derek, and that we'll get into a little bit more of it here in just 1 second. Murdoch Chevy in Woods Cross wants to thank you for a great October. So what are they going to do in November for you? How does $10,000 off the remaining 2017 Silverado sound? How about $9,000 off the 2017 Tahoes and Suburbans? Does that sound good? How about $7,000 off the remaining 2017 Traverses? Now, anytime you're dealing with Murdochs, I've talked to you about the no regret, talked about other families, been doing Chevys for 91 years, and what they want to make sure that they do is that you have a great experience, so they're going to do everything they can, such as 5-day exchange policy, price match guarantee, safety inspections for life, car washes for life. That's the Murdoch Auto Group. You know you can trust them. They're going to make sure that you get a great experience. Tyson's running the Chevy dealership up in Woods Cross. It's got a great group of guys up there. They've been selling Chevys for 91 years in Utah. And if you're looking for a Chevy truck, the only line of trucks that has every single there for you, if it's an SUV, you've heard the deals. They're incredible, from $7,000 to $10,000 off. Do it. Find the new roads at Murdoch Chevrolet in Logan and Linden. You can get started at MurdochChev.com. That's MurdochChev.com. Tell Tyson I say hi when you head up there. Ask him how Caleb's birthday was. All right. Rudy Gobert out 4 to 6 weeks. Let's break down the various impacts of this. Obviously, I mean, just big picture, you're losing a player who is one of the three dominant defensive players in the league, who's the anchor to the fundamental concept of who you are as a team. Like, brutal. Brutal. Maybe legitimate discussion, too much to overcome in regards to trying to make the playoffs. You know, 4 to 6 weeks without your main guy, when it's the cornerstone of who you are, it's brutal. What's interesting about the schedule is it's so tilted both directions. So in other words, we play Minnesota tonight, who's good. Probably, frankly, Gobert's probably the difference between us being even or an underdog, or maybe even favored or the underdog. Then we go to New York, Brooklyn, Orlando, Philly. Not brutal. Chicago's bad. Milwaukee at home. Denver at home. Probably those two flip into this favored with, not favored without. At the Clippers, probably not favored no matter what. New Orleans, Washington at home. At Oklahoma City. That gets us to December 5th, so that's 3 weeks. It then gets so brutal after that stretch that we would have had to try to find a way to steal one somewhere, because you just can't go lose 12 in a row. But the schedule had us losing 12 in a row. So to some extent, I'm actually not convinced. This is a weird way to look at it, but these are not games you're supposed to win. At Boston, at Cleveland, at Houston, at Oklahoma City, home against San Antonio, home against OKC, at Denver, at Golden State, home against Cleveland, home against New Orleans, maybe, at Denver, at Miami, at Washington, at Charlotte. Like, those are not games you're supposed to win. You got to probably get two or three of them somehow. But we weren't going to be favored in any of them. So what I actually see is the vital stretch here is the next 3 weeks. If somehow on this upcoming road trip, coming up forward, the Jazz can hold it together a little bit, then they've got a really legitimate chance that they survive this. By the time Gobert comes back, they're going to lose a bunch of games anyway, and then you go into the second half of the schedule, which has got some soft parts to it, and try to survive. But you've got to somehow survive the next 3 weeks. Between now and December 5th, when we go to Oklahoma City, you've got to have found a way to win basketball games, despite the fact you're missing your main guy. Now, the weird one on this year is the numbers with Rudy on and off the floor are not good. So Rudy on the floor, the offensive rating's been a 94.4, and with him off the floor, it's been a 106.2. Defensive rating has actually been less good with him on the floor. The mix with him and Rubio was not, and Favors was not working at all. So I'm not saying there's a positive here, but the initial starting lineup drop-off may not be as significant as we're all talking about, as everyone thinks. There was something had to be done. Quinn had, I think, decided that Favors was moving to backup center and that only the few starting minutes a night we're going to have those three on the floor together. The offensive rating with Rubio, Gobert, and Favors after 200 minutes was a 90.8. We don't actually have a three-man group that's played more than 70 minutes together as an offensive rating over 100. So now we're going to spread the floor. Offensively, hopefully get better. Defensively, I don't know how we're going to survive. And we get thin. So Udo's your backup center. Maybe Bradley gets a few minutes. With Favors gone, your power forwards are now Cephalosha, Jerebko, and Joe Johnson when he comes back. Joe Ingles is now backed up by Alec Burks. Rubio, Mitchell, Hood are combining probably each for 30 minutes, and Neto's getting a few of the 96 for those guard minutes. So we get very thin, very fast, and frankly, not very versatile. Like, we're interchangeable, but we kind of only can play one way now. So Favors is your center, Udo is your backup center, and you're playing with a four that's either Cephalosha, Jerebko, or Joe Johnson. Rebounding is going to be an issue. There's going to be, you don't have multiple ways to play right now with the injury. You've lost considerable depth across the boards. One thing to watch is some of our rebounding rates when guys are on the floor. When Joe Johnson's been on the floor, our defensive rebounding rate was a 68.5, which is incredibly low. And that's going to be, when he comes back, when he's playing those minutes, that's going to be a key thing to watch. The defensive rating with Favors on the floor has been great. And the offensive rebounding came back the other night with Derek. Rubio looked like the player you wanted to have. Now, again, it was against Brooklyn. Brooklyn was on their fifth game of their trip. Brooklyn plays Trevor Booker and Quincy Acey as their center. So those, it's just not a test you can believe in. When Jerebko's been on the floor, we've been able to rebound. And when Cephalosha's been on the floor, we've been able to rebound. Worth monitoring. Worth keeping an eye on. Our pace has been up with our slowest pace player is, in fact, I think, Rudy. So we'll probably play a little quicker. We'll probably open the floor a little bit. Might be a little better for Rubio. Favors rolling to the basket. There's a legitimate argument that in some ways Derek can do some pick and roll things that Rudy can't do. So we'll be different. There's no chance we're better. Like, let's not. I don't mean it. I'm just trying to figure out how we're going to survive. And the question is, can we survive that in the next 3 weeks? And can we open up the floor enough to get some of these guys out of their offensive doldrums in a manner that allows us to survive? Favors are going to have to be successful on the pick and roll so far this year. He's shooting 46% as the pick and roll man, but most of that has been pick and pop. Now he's going to be pick and roll, which he's just far, far better at. His mid-range shooting has been poor recently. So now he does that. Cephalosha's good enough three-point shooter to spread. Hopefully Jerebko is too. And hopefully we get some good news on Joe Johnson here in the near future. So it's not going to be an easy road. But that's what we've got, right? Like, there's not a lot that we can, you know, try to claim otherwise or try to convince yourself that we've got some sort of success. Oh, yeah, we've got the answer. No, none of that. If your company is in need of great talent, but on a short time, and you don't have time to go through the huge stack of resumes, then ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. Then ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting, so you receive the best possible matches. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them for you. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And because you're listening to this show today, you can find out why ZipRecruiter is used by growing businesses of all sizes, industries, to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. Here's how you do it. Right now, go to ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/LOJazz. ZipRecruiter.com/LOJazz. Got it? ZipRecruiter.com/LOJazz. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And we're joined by Alan Horton, radio voice of the Minnesota Timberwolves. There may or may not have been a old Seattle reunion, second annual ping pong tournament between my daughter and Alan,
yeah,
and the second play-by-play sleepover is one.
There's no video evidence of it,
no.
So we can't confirm nor deny
right
whether this occurred. But
yes, other than a morning podcast,
right,
which means that you took a really early Uber.
all right. The way up here.
Let's talk Minnesota Timberwolves. You guys want a nice little win streak and then drop one in Phoenix, like, do you know who you are yet?
No, I don't think we do. I think early on we knew that when we had Jimmy Butler, we were a pretty darn good team. 7-1 with him. The two losses just fell off the table as far as production, offensively, defensively. Two losses to Indiana and Detroit back-to-back, and it was jarring, the difference with Jimmy Butler, without Jimmy Butler. Then you win 5 in a row, go into Golden State without Kevin Durant. I still think that's not a bad loss. Obviously, the Warriors, even without Durant, were just the number one defense in November, just had a dominant second half. And then the Phoenix loss is troubling. That's the one that kind of, you know, you expected to bounce back against, and you don't. And now you're kind of left wondering, okay, where is this team? What are they, the team that won 5 in a row and looked better defensively and were starting to figure things out? Or, you know, you give up 54% shooting and over 60% effective field goal percentage to Phoenix. That's not good.
Troubling in the sense it just kind of showed all the old Timberwolves warts, a late game collapse, and then a lack of defensive. Is that kind of what's troubling about
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and I think a lot of Wolves fans are going through that. They're going through that, you know, they know the history. Last year, the year before, years before that, 13 straight years of not making the playoffs. And so every game, they're kind of judging this by, well, in the past, this is the kind of game we would lose. And so when you do lose one like that, oh, here we go again. But it's obviously a different roster, a different time. But the late game issues were evident against Phoenix. I mean, you're up by 6 with 4 minutes to go, and you've got possession of the basketball. And you give up a 14-0 run. I mean, it was a complete and utter turnaround from what we've seen in clutch time. We won one game against you guys close with Jamal Crawford's 3 in the corner. But it's they had turned things around in clutch time, which is something they have not been a strong clutch time team last year, year before, 5 years in a row now, bottom 10 in the league in clutch time win percentage. So it was a little disturbing to see that happen against Phoenix, just fall off the table like that.
Clutch is such a weird stack because sometimes it has to do with whether you're coming in winning or trailing or, you know.
It does.
To narrow it down last year to final 5 minutes within 3 so that, you know.
So it's a little closer.
Even closer to some. If you come in, if you hit the bucket to put it to 5 and they have the ball, it's not actually a very close game at that point.
No, it's not. But you hope that maybe that balances out. Maybe right. There are some games where the opponent comes within 5 and then you close it out. But there is a huge difference. And I've noticed that this year, even coming into those clutch moments, even or ahead by a possession, that makes all the difference in the world.
So two things about your team that I think, one from the beginning of the year that I thought was interesting the whole time out. When I ran some projection numbers to start the year, it was actually Minnesota, not Oklahoma City, that had the most amount of possessions on their roster. Now we're seeing Oklahoma City all those guys are getting their shots. Like, it's not as though Carmelo or Paul George or Westbrook's taking a few less, but really they're getting their shots because the other guys just aren't. Your team's very different in the sense that Teague's a high possession user, Butler's a high possession user, Wiggins, Towns are super high. Taj Gibson is a bigger possession user than people realize, usually around 11, 12, 13, 14 a game. So, and then you had Shabazz, then you have Gorgui Jang.
And Jamal Crawford.
And Jamal Crawford. Yeah. So when I totaled up the Minnesota possessions, I had it somewhere, you know, you're supposed to have about 100 a game. I had you at about 120, which meant that every guy on your team had to take about a 10 or 15% decrease of their usual usage. Not usage rate, but just present. What has happened in that regard? How has that played out?
The way it's played out is that Jimmy Butler has deferred to everybody. His usage rate went from, what, last year about 27% down to 20%. He was fifth on the team heading into that Phoenix game. So he has really deferred to Towns, to Wiggins. Even Jeff Teague has a higher usage percentage. And then Jamal Crawford coming off the bench. That's a little misleading because Jamal is usually on the second unit when Jimmy's not out there. But it's been... it's been Jimmy Butler doing all the little things, deferring to other guys. He's fine with it. But when we went in that Golden State game, when you get to those big games, you need your big players to step up. And I really felt like that Warriors game, I kept waiting, and I said it on the air. Nobody could get anything going. You're like, okay, this is the time where Wiggins has to step up, or Towns, or maybe it's Jimmy Butler. Maybe it's his time to finally start emphasizing his offensive game. It didn't happen. And then the practice before the Phoenix game, he came out and said, the time is now for me to be more aggressive. He was only averaging about 12 shots a game. He took 17 last year. We talked about the usage rate. His free throws are almost cut in half from a season ago. And so he was more aggressive against Phoenix. He shot it 17 times. He got to the free throw line 16 times. But he didn't shoot the ball very well. His shot has been pretty much off almost all season. He struggled on his long twos, hitting just 16% from there. And he's taking a bunch, you know, two or three shots a game from that range. And so he has deferred, and now it'll be interesting to see when he says he wants to be more aggressive, what that does, because now that's going to take away shots from Wiggins, Towns, Teague, how that balance. I just think they have to find that balance somewhere there where he is a little more aggressive, but I don't think that means getting back to the numbers where he's been last year and in years prior.
Final thing for you. I was listening to Kevin Arnovitz and Kevin Pelton on a, I think it was their Hoops Collective podcast.
Yep.
They did this segment of called Rodney Hood or Andrew Wiggins, which, I'll be honest, I was like, even as a Rodney Hood guy, I'm like, this is ridiculous. And they went through it being pretty critical of Andrew Wiggins. I then go and look up my PAC numbers. He's a pretty substantially negative player and doesn't do a lot of other things. What does he need to do to get people, I don't know if the phrase back on his side is right,
yeah.
But he's obviously gone from this number one pick that people, including myself, thought he was going to be otherworldly to now having a conversation like Arnovitz and Pelton, two of the brightest game names in the game, are having.
Yeah.
What are the next steps, and where does Andrew Wiggins, what does he have to do?
Well, I think Wolves fans have been, part of the problem is that you have these expectations coming in. You know, when he was drafted number one, hey, he is a lockdown defender. He can be your top defender on the other team's best player. And that just hasn't materialized. You know, what he does well is score the basketball. And he has been able to get to the free throw line well. He's developed his outside shot, which has gotten better each and every year. So he's become more efficient that way. But he still relies on the mid-range an awful lot. And it's been amazing now in his fourth year that the rebounding numbers, the assist numbers, the steals, the blocks are just really, really low. And I think that's what fans are waiting for. And I think that's what I keep waiting for, too, is to, you know, to average 6 or 7 rebounds a game, which is not, I don't think, out of the realm of possibility for a small forward who's 6'8" and has great athletic ability like he does. You know, he's on a stretch right now where he has 1 rebound in the last 49 minutes of play. He has no assists in his last 41 minutes of play. And it's not to point that out that we keep track of all that, but it's just so glaring sometimes that he doesn't give you those other things. He's not filling the rest of the box score. And that's been frustrating. I think it has been. I think he's been more efficient. He's been better of late. He's shooting almost 60% over his last 3 games. I think he's found a nice little complementary role now that Jimmy Butler is there, and Butler can be the top defender. I think that frees things up. I think that lifts the burden that's been on Wiggins his first 3 years, where he's had to carry the load offensively and carry the load defensively. And I think that's suffered on the defensive end because he's had to carry such an offensive load, he and Cat both. But I think we keep waiting for him to fill the rest of the box score. But you're now at a point where in your fourth year, how much more time do you give a guy? I mean, he's going to be he's signed the contract extension. He's a max guy, and I think these whispers and talk about that will only continue to grow unless he's able to find a way to fill the rest of that box score.
Minnesota 7-5. Frankly, if Wiggins doesn't hit a half court shot and Jamal Crawford doesn't hit a great corner three, they're 5-7, and we're worried about them. Mm-hmm. They probably should be somewhere in the middle. It's an interesting team, still ranked 28th in the league defensively, which is stunning as well. Alan Horton, honorary member of the Locked On Podcast Network, once host of Locked On Wolves, actually, for a brief little stint.
That's
there.
Right. Got that thing started. Got it off the ground.
You did. Yeah. Colton's doing an incredible job with it now on Locked On Wolves. This has been the play-by-play announcer. You'll never know. Lots of fun to have Alan in the house, literally. It has been Locked On Jazz, brought to you by ZipRecruiter. LO Jazz to start ZipRecruiter for free, and by Murdoch Chevy. Stop by, say hi to Tyson and the crew. Take advantage of those incredible November savings going on at Murdoch Chevy. This has been Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Make sure you get Empty the Noggin postcast and all the others at LockedOnJazz.net after every game.